100 episodes, bitch.
Yeah, bitch.
That's nuts.
Nuts is, I tells you. Okay. I think I'm ready.
I think I'm ready. How's the level? Yeah. All right?
Yeah, seems okay.
If it's good enough for you, yeah. It's good enough for me.
Hello! And welcome to episode 100 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Yes! Woo! My name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
And this week we are looking at the secret of my success.
Uh-huh.
We didn't actually plan that.
No, we didn't.
Episode 100, Darren, you know what that means.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes.
What are you pulling out under the table?
I'm pulling out Prosecco.
We're
celebrating. You know, when we get to episode 1,000, let's make it champagne. But okay. For now.
Episode 1,000, fucking hell. Yeah. Okay. Too technical
it
for you?
It is too technical for me.
Don't point it at me.
I can't find the hole.
Oh, hell. Celebrate good times. Come on.
100 episodes. So that is absolute lunacy.
That's crazy.
Did you think we'd get to 100?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Mm. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Did you not?
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we'd started a podcast like, I don't know, in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And we did about 4 episodes.
Was it?
Look Who's Talking Who? 4, 5, 6 episodes?
Yeah.
You know, opposed to the other ones we started.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm glad this has persisted because it is so much fun.
You're making a fucking meal of that, though.
I am making a meal. There we go. A
lot of filler there. Bear with us.
Okay, so do you want to get your glass ready?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, listener, if you want to get your glass ready
Yeah,
too.
Join us in a glass of Prosecco, listener.
Here we go.
Woohoo! Celebrate good times. Come on!
I took my life in my hands then when I opened it above my £1,500 computer. Right, okay.
Get off that.
All right, we have some Prosecco.
Yes. Well, here we are. Cheersy!
Cheersy! Episode 100.
Cheersy, that's the wrong end of the episode, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's been us.
Pink as well, isn't it?
Yep.
Mm.
Mm. That's not bad.
Oh, that's Trez Bond, Rodders.
Mm.
Oh, that's very drying.
So yeah, episode 100, Secret of My Success. Now, there is a story behind us choosing to do Secret of My Success.
There is. We like the film.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, we did.
Well, we did, yeah. No, so when we first started this podcast, our first episode was Secret of My Success. And I can hear you, listener, going, no, I've looked and your first episode was not
sweet
that.
Child of mine, it definitely is not.
However, there is an unaired pilot of us talking about Secret of My Success. And we looked at it and we went,
But that was the point of doing the pilot, though, wasn't it?
Exactly.
What worked, what didn't work. What we can improve on, what we could change.
We tore it apart and we ended up with the podcast that you hear now. So we thought, how serendipitous to go back to about February, March 2020.
Yeah.
Before the world went nuts.
Before the mad bat disease. Good days.
How you been keeping, though? You been good?
It's been an interesting week. Let's put it that way. Yeah, yeah.
Such as?
Well, I might have had a little victory and a little small claims court case that I had on Friday.
Excellent. Against?
Well, I'm not prepared to say, but let's just say it rhymes with Burmese. or Bevery.
Burmese or Bevery, yeah.
But yeah, all I would say is if any parcel company that might rhyme with Bevery loses any of your parcel, then don't give up. Fight them all the way to get what you are owed. That's all I'm going to say.
And well done for you. Thank well you done for you on that. I'll
Thank
drink
you
to
much.
That.
I'll chat to you.
God, this is going to be a messy episode.
Fucking said about as well. What about yourself? Good week.
Fairly pedestrian. Just getting ill because I'm old.
Oh.
So there we go.
Shit.
Early 40s when we started this.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, no, it's been fine. A few gigs, whatever else. Just not a lot really. It's been wonderful going back to watch this film, though.
Mm. Yes, it has. But, well, anyway, before we get into that, I guess we should go back for the final time Don't cry, listener. Have you got any facts for us from 1987?
Yes, I do. Yeah. All right, so some of the things that happened tonight. Let's start off with the charts. Right. Over in America, at number 5 in the box office charts, because I believe we're looking at April?
Yeah, the film came out around about the 7th.
7th and 10th. Yeah. Yeah. So, number 5, Lethal Weapon.
Nice. Now, good film. See,
I thought that was a... like, because it's set at Christmas. I didn't know if it was released around December, but clearly not. I should know, because we've done it.
We have. We have. Not long ago, either.
Number 4, Blind Date.
With Cilla Black.
With Cilla Black.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Bruce Willis film.
See, I think that I might remember the sleeve for
I
that.
Think Bruce Willis video. And Kim Basinger. I think. I think.
Fine couple.
Number 3, a re-release of the Aristocats.
They liked a lot of re-releases then, didn't they? Yeah, I guess with the whole video market.
The video market, yeah. they could milk more money out of the public.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess the Aristocats wasn't that old at the time either.
I think Sony are doing a thing over the next month or two where they are re-releasing all the Spider-Man films.
Okay.
So, from Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, all the new ones. So they're re-releasing all of those
into the
cinema. Yeah. So it can celebrate 100 years.
That seems to be a thing now, doesn't it? To whack a film back in the cinema for a couple of nights or whatever.
Speaking of whacking things in, at number 2 was Police Academy 4.
Or dragging them out. I don't know which is there. Yeah.
Right, can you remember the surtitle of that?
Oh, was that Miami Beach or was that...
Nope, that was number 5.
Moscow?
Number 7.
I can't. Give me a clue,
Three words. First word. Stop playing charades.
Don't know.
Citizens.
On Patrol.
That's it, yep. Okay. And the number 1 was The Secret of My Success.
What's that?
It's, well, I'm living 25 hours a day. That's what it is.
Only 24 hours in a day, night ranging, you might remember.
Oh, yeah.
God, ting gobfuls. You might want to remember that.
Yes. Over here in the UK, so at number 5, we had a film called The Fourth Protocol. Ever heard of it?
Possibly. What's it about?
So, well, John Preston is a British agent with the task of... preventing the Russians detonating a nuclear explosion next to an
it's catching, isn't it?
Next to an American base in the UK. So it's Michael Caine, Pierce Brosnan, and Ned Beatty.
No, absolutely not.
Number 4, Little Shop of Horrors.
What's that?
Great film. Number 3, I'd never heard of this. 84 Charing Cross Road.
Is that like Sliding Doors? Or have I just completely made that?
Apparently it's a true story. Of a transatlantic business correspondence about used books that developed into a close friendship.
Then absolutely not. No.
And it stars Anne Bancroft, Anthony Hopkins, and Judi Dench. So some big hitters there.
Mm.
Number 2, I think you're going to love number 2. If I go...
What's that?
I'm going to turn my hat backwards.
What's that? What's that?
Over the top.
What's that? That got to number 2 in our chart.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the number 1 was Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
What's that?
Oh, for goodness. Is that going to be a theme this week? What's that?
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Just a plethora of facts that I've thrown in this week because, you know, we are moving formats next week. So some of the facts will go. The world population reaches approximately 5 billion.
5 billion? Isn't it like 8 billion now?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, it's going to get worse, isn't it? It's like Gremlins.
Yeah.
The US stock market crash, that happened.
In
87, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, again.
Right. Okay. What award did Harry Hamlin receive that year?
Harry Hamlin, that name rings a little.
LA Law?
Was it a Razzie?
No, it was People's Sexiest Man Alive.
Okay.
I mean, LA Law, that used to be so, so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And actually quite appropriate to Cigar Massive.
Why is it appropriate to Cigar Massive?
Same sort of thing, isn't it?
Well, one's LA, one's New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Both in cities.
Yuppies.
Great. Married with Children premiered.
What's that?
Oh, come on. Engage with me here.
Oh, did it?
Okay. Yes, it did. Ah. I thought that would... In my head, that's 90s, but no.
No.
No, 87.
87.
Yeah, great. Right, I'm taking your booze away from you.
Oh, don't take my boobs away.
Nintendo released Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
At least he's punching and biting.
Yeah, there is that. But do you remember that? Like, I think you were like a little figure in front and you had all these big boxers. It was a huge game.
Vague. I wasn't really a gamer.
No, you were a masturbator. Right, okay. This is a funny story. We were talking this week, me and a couple of friends. Have you ever heard of Baby Jessica?
Is she... No.
She fell into a well. She was like 18 months old and she fell into a well in America, right, in Texas. And it took 2 days to rescue her. It was like a big thing.
Wow.
And I was only talking about it this week with some friends of ours. And they were like, yeah, you've never heard of Baby Jessica? I was like, no. And it turns out it's from 1987. Yeah, so she...
18 months old and fell into a well.
Fell into a well in her aunt's backyard. And because of the structure of the well, whatever, it took 2 days to get her out. She was fine. Like, wow. You know, but yeah, 2 days, 18 months old.
Bloody kids are fucking idiots.
56 hours to get her out of the well.
Yeah, oh, they made her pay.
What? Did you do stupid stuff as a kid?
Never.
I did.
I was a perfect child and a perfect adult. I've never done anything daft in my life.
My grandmother in Belfast used to keep a key inside. No, my grandfather, sorry. My grandfather used to keep a key inside. No, it was my grandmother. Anyway. Used to keep a key inside, hanging up on a piece of string inside the front door. And I thought, I'll just grab that with my arm. I tried to reach through the letterbox and I got my arm stuck.
Was that not the point of them, though? Because I remember lots of people doing that. Literally a bit of string behind the,
maybe,
the letterbox.
Yeah, no. My grandfather had the string. My grandmother didn't. But I thought I could just reach through and unlock the door anyway. I could not. Fire department would call out. They had to prise open the letter. Yeah. Anyway, that was my 20th birthday. Anyway, and finally, red M&Ms were back in the marketplace after being banned for 11 years.
We didn't have M&Ms in 87, did we?
I think America did.
Right.
Basically, in 76, there was some issue with the red food colouring. They thought it might be a possible health risk. So red M&Ms were out of circulation for 11 years, and they came back in 1987.
Nice.
So there we go. Those are my facts from 1987. Let's go to the charts.
The Secret of My Success had its LA premiere on the 7th of April 1987 and went on general release in the USA on the 10th of April 1987. And so this week, we are looking at the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 5th of April 1987. At number 10 this week, it's last week's 17 and the Fine Young Cannibals and Ever Fallen in Love. Down one place to number 9, it's Alison Moyet and Weak in the Presence of Beauty. Up from 21 to this week's 8, it's the Irish Rover from the Pogues and the Dubliners. Up 8 places to number 7, it's Terence Trent D'Arby and If You Let Me Stay. Rising one place to this week's 6, it's Club Nouveau and Lean On Me. And falling one place to this week's 5, it's U2 and With or Without You. At number 4 this week, it's a fall of one place for Janet Jackson and Let's Wait a While. Last week's 5 is this week's 3. It's Madonna and Lattice La Bonita. It's a non-mover at number 2 this week for Mel and Kim and Respectable. Which means it's a non-mover at number 1 for Fairy Aid and Let It Be. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 5th of April, 1987.
That's a brilliant chart.
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah. I was only listening to With or Without You last night.
Yeah.
On the drive home. It's just brilliant.
I mean, I'm not a massive fan of U2, them.
But the song.
I love their music.
What a song.
Yeah. I mean, there's some crackers there. Weak in the Presence of Beauty. I've said many, many times. Many, many. On this podcast. How much I love Alison Moyet. And that's a great song. At number 8, a great party tune, The Irish Rover.
Mm.
I think everyone who's ever been in an Irish bar anywhere in the world has probably heard that at some point. And Terence Trent D'Arby, as he was then, If You Let Me Stay, which is one of those songs. Yeah, it's a classic of the 80s, I think.
It's just a really strong chart.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. And again, probably one I know more because I was a bit older. I was about 9 years old, you know, in 1987. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Number three, La Sabonita from Madonna. Number two, Mel and Kim. Respect a ball.
Sorry.
And Fairy Aid with Let It Be at number one.
I can't remember that. I'm guessing that's a cover of...
It's Let It Be from the Beatles. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was pretty much led by Paul McCartney, if I remember rightly, which would be for, I think, the Zeebrugge ferry disaster.
Right, okay.
Which was earlier in March. Anyway, just outside of the top 10.
Yes, hit me.
What? Now?
Hit me!
Bitch!
Hit me with your rhythm stick!
No, that's not in the chart. Okay. It'd be funny enough if it was. At number 11, Curiosity Killed the Cat, An Ordinary Day. I love Curiosity. They've gone off the board a bit now, but we won't go there. At 15, Prince and the Sign, Oh, the Times. Wanted Dead or Alive at 17 from Bon Jovi.
Song.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this is around the time Young Guns 2 must have come out then, or?
No, that was 90, Young Guns 2, but Young Guns, I think, was 88.
And did that have Wanted Dead or Alive?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, shut up, Matt.
Yeah. Literally. 18, 18, you mentioned him already tonight, Respect Yourself from Bruce Willis. At 20, the late great Freddie Mercury and The Great Pretender. 21, I mean, this is obviously from another film we've done very recently, Mental as Anything and Live It Up.
Yes.
23, we've seen him, Living in a Box from Living in a Box. 25, a song that I hated at the time because it's taken pop in a different direction for me, so I wasn't overly keen. But now I really like the song, Beastie Boys, and You've Got to Fight for Your Right to Party.
Oh, that's a tune. I remember that from the KP Peanuts advert.
Was it? I don't remember that.
Yeah, some guy jumped onto a boat. Do you not remember that advert?
No, I don't think
well,
so.
Well, that can be our advert.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. 27, Nick Kamen, and Loving You is Sweeter Than Ever. 29, It Doesn't Have to Be from Erasure. I wonder if he was sober at the time. 32, Another Step Closer to You from Kim Wilde and Junior. 33, Man to Man Meets Man Parish and Male Stripper, 1987. 34, Al Jarreau and the Moonlighting Theme. 37, Stand By Me from Benny King.
I'm guessing the Moonlighting Theme, that was Bruce Willis as well, wasn't it? Moonlighting?
No, that was Al Jarreau.
But no, he was in the show,
TV
yeah.
Series. Yeah, yeah. And at 40, again, a re-release of either from a film or this one, I think, was from a jeans advert, When a Man Loves a Woman by Percy Sledge. Yeah.
Fantastic. So that's there a we great go. Chart.
So that is the chart from April 87.
All right, then. I suppose now that we've had the chart, it is time for Darren's Challenge. So every episode, Darren has a challenge to link the last episode to this episode in a certain amount of steps. And he starts at 5, goes 4, 3, 2, 1, etc. And he now has 2 steps to get from the last episode, which was...
A View to a Kill.
Sure.
Bastard.
To this episode, which is
The Secret of My Success.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. Okay, as Matt said, I've got 2 steps to get from A View to a Kill to The Secret of My Success. And we're going to start this week with the star of A View to a Kill, Roger Moore. So, step 1. Roger Moore was in Curse of the Pink Panther with Denise Crosby. And step 2, Denise Crosby was in Pet Sematary with Fred Gwynn, who plays Davenport in The Secret of My Success. And that's the 2-step challenge.
I was like, shall I tell him the name or is it one of my questions?
Oh, I should have written it down. But yeah,
Fred
there
Gwynn.
We go. Fred Gwynn, yeah.
Yeah.
God bless him. A little bit triv, actually. It's, yeah. Fred Gwynn and Richard Jordan, who plays Uncle Howard in the film, both died within a month of each other in 1993.
Yeah, when I was looking through the IMDb as well, like Aunt Vera went a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, no!
And sorry to bring the podcast down a little bit again, but, you know, we said last week, enough is enough now. And then this week, we've lost Eric Carmen.
Mm.
And this morning it was announced, Steve Harley of Cockney Rebel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Stop now. Enough is enough.
Darren's decreed it, so that's what will happen.
Yes. But
you've done your challenge, so...
Yes. Oh, yes, back to the challenge. Yes.
So you have 1 step to actually link Link episode 100 to 101.
Thinking about it, that's going to be an interesting one.
Yes, it will be. It will be. I like your challenge every week, though. That's nice.
I think we should keep it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Right, at this point, before we take a little break, we're gonna give our initial reaction. I almost went sum up then. Yeah, we're going to give our initial reaction to the film. And being an even-numbered episode, I get to go first.
Yeah. 100 episodes.
Oh, I know, fucking hell. You'd think I'd know by now. Yes, I'm glad we did it again, because I hadn't watched it since we recorded the pilot.
Nearly 4 years ago.
So it was great to go back and watch it again. It's so much fun. There's a little element that sort of takes the fun away a little bit, but that we'll get into that. But it's a lot of fun. It flies by. There's so much to enjoy. And I really did enjoy it. Yeah, it's a great film. And so my initial reaction, yeah, I love it. I loved it then. I still love it now. Yourself?
I mean, it wasn't going to be any different. I absolutely adore this film. Mm. And we talked about this film a long time before we even started recording the podcast. And I think out of everyone I know, you're one of the people that knows it. And I think it's relatively unknown in our friendship circle.
Well, just relatively unknown full stop, I think.
But it did quite well at the charts in America. It opened at number one and was at number one for 5 weeks. It brought in a lot of money for...
Didn't it?
It's just Jay Fox. He's charming, you know, and the film, as you say, it zips along. Wonderful soundtrack. I had a smile on my face the entire time. I adore this film. I loved it. So that is... that's as short as it needs to be.
Nice. Well, there you go. That's our initial reaction. We're going to take a short break now, and we shall be back with Matt's challenge and everything else.
And we're back. Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, episode 100, where we are looking at...
Celebrate Good Times, come on!
The Secret of My Success.
And regular listeners will know that at this point in the podcast, Matt has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film, and he has as many seconds as the film has minutes. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. 100 Matthew, how long was the film?
It was 1 hour and 51 minutes.
So you have 1 minute, 51 seconds to give us the synopsis. Are you ready? Well, that's fantastic. Let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
Bradley Foster leaves Kansas to move to New York to succeed in business. Upon arrival, he ends up in a shitty apartment and the job he was going to no longer exists. He gets in touch with his distant relative, Uncle Howard, who runs a huge corporation, and gets a job in the mailroom. Whilst there, he reads memos and knows the company could do better. He drives Vera home and has sexy time with her before realising she's married to his sort of uncle. He carries on in the mailroom and falls in love with Christy, who is an executive that, unbeknownst to him, is nobbing his uncle. He then decides to take matters into his own hands and comes up with the alias Carlton Whitfield and starts making waves in the company. A company which is at threat from a hostile takeover. He gets closer to Christy, but not before she steals some files from under the direction of Uncle Howard. Carlton slash Brantley and Christy fall in love, and they both end up at Uncle Howard's for the weekend, where the rich and powerful are meeting. The whole ruse comes unstuck as a farcical bedroom sneaking scene ensues. Bradley is outed and he and Christy are fired. They forgive each other quickly and, with the help of people he met at the weekend and Auntie Vera, save the company from takeover from Herman Munster. He has now achieved success in only a matter of weeks. See, in the 80s, nothing was impossible. Not even Marty McFly ending up with Supergirl.
You had to get it in, didn't you?
Of course I did.
As it were. Okay, then. So just to remind us, how long was the film?
1:51.
So you had 1 minute 51 seconds. You did it in, drum roll, 123.2. Way ahead.
And I mean, as far as plot points go, it's fairly complicated.
But I should drink anyway.
I'm going to drink with you. It's episode 100.
Cheersy.
Cheersy. Oh, that's two cheersies already.
Hey. Oh, lovely old job. Yeah, so there we go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Nicely done. Then let's move on. Any alternative castings for us?
I did more of a deep dive this week, but the only thing I found was apparently Herbert Ross wanted Christy McNichol.
Yeah.
For the lead actress, and apparently she was fired 2 weeks before filming.
Yeah.
Which, if this is true...
Yes, I read this as well. We've got to be very careful what we say here.
Yeah, so because of fear she might be difficult to work with because of her bipolar disorder. I was like, I hope that's not true.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, why that would be even be a thing, I don't really understand.
I mean, but it's the internet, isn't it? So, hopefully that's a fake fact. But, yeah, apparently Christy McNichol... I couldn't find any alternatives. I guess this was a Michael J. Fox starring vehicle from the start.
Because he really needed it.
Well, that's it. They're riding high on the waves, aren't they?
But at the end of the day, it all comes down to box office. Simple as that. Yeah.
So do you know what the budget was on this?
Yes, the budget was $12 million. And the return was a very, very healthy $111
million. Yeah.
I mean, for a film that's pretty unknown, really... In the grand scheme of Michael J. Fox films, you know, Back to the Future and Teen Wolf.
And Doc Hollywood.
Bright Lights, Big City. And this is sort of one that it's. I think it's more of a case of if you know, you know. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, $100 million return on top of the budget.
Yep, that's it. I mean, you take out marketing and they've still made a healthy profit.
Yes. Yeah. And he's worth every penny he's paid, I think.
Of course he is. I mean, because this film would have probably, not succeeded as well without Jay Fox. I mean, financially, but also, you know, when it comes to performances, he kind of brings a charm to everything. And it could be a lot cheesier if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But also, like you say, it's the charm because he is full of it. This film is full of charm and it all comes from him. But it's a real, like you say, it's a vehicle for him and he carries the film. Is there a scene he's not in?
I can't think of one.
No. Me neither.
Maybe a couple of the boardroom bits or... No, yeah,
but
maybe...
He still ends up coming into the scene or leaving
the
scene.
At the top, when they're running around, he's not in that. But cuts in with him.
Which you would not fucking get me up there doing. I mean, running for a start, you can shut that up. but on the top of a fucking skyscraper, I don't think so.
No.
Right, so anyway, yes. Directed by Herbert Ross. Cindy Crawford pops up at the beginning as
well.
Yes,
she does.
In the little... There's a few montages, and she's in the opening montage. Allegedly inspired, the whole film is inspired by Steven Spielberg's...
When he snuck into the...
Into the back lot and stuff. Yeah. And so his journey to stardom in LA. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
But and also on the flip side, the original story was allegedly a lot darker with Uncle Howard's...
She a prostitute and, or something?
Yeah. And him encouraging Brantley to be a part of her entourage, probably the wrong word, but
Brantley. Someone gave you that name.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, I don't think I've ever met anyone called Brantley. Have you?
I have not.
No. Bradley, yes, but yeah. I think this is. A much more mature role for Jay Fox, but maybe not in terms of him, but in terms of the whole film. It's a much more mature film that he's in terms of all the sex. And there is a lot of sexy time.
Yep.
And it's quite graphic. There's a lot of...
Well, it's kind of... It's messed about, isn't it? A little bit. It's, you know, you got the sexy time with the people next door.
Yes.
You've got a little bit of sexy time with him and Helen Slater.
Yes. He doinks his auntie at least twice.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of a parallel here or thing going on with Jay Fox and incest movies.
Yes. he's matured though. It's not his mother anymore. It's his auntie.
That's fine. That's fine. I mean,
but
is he secretly Cornish?
But the familial aspect as well is so far removed anyway. About like my cousin Ellen married his
who lived around the corner from his dog.
Yeah, it's Spaceballs. It's like my uncle's father's sister's.
I'm half Chinese on my stepdad's side.
And as he says, you know, it's a shirt-tail relative, to say the least.
Mm. I would, though. Saucy minx.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vera.
Wowzers. But we see lots of New York and how it's a completely sort of a culture shock compared to Kansas.
But you know, that's what I like about it, though. I think at the beginning of the film, they make it that sort of like gritty New York. Mm. But then as the film progresses and he's starting to succeed more, the New York looks fucking beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely that dichotomy of glitz and glam and
yeah.
And crud and danger and violence at the start. But there's also, for me, I've got the parallel with, it's almost, what's the word I'm looking for? I've had too much Prosecco now. But, you know, when he's, I think the shot is repeated a couple of times, but all the suits, when they're marching towards yes. there, it's sort of very much like Metropolis, the 1920s Metropolis film. So all the, not proles, but
no, and the same is kind of in a film that I don't think we can do, because I think it's 1990, Joe versus the Volcano.
Right.
Where, have you seen that with Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks.
And he's in a monotonous job and like it's all very grey and you've got lots of people marching to their, you know,
marching
to their jobs. But the shot, I mean, I'm talking like the aerial shots in New York as we get through the film. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But again, it's with people like Howard especially, it's that the thing we've talked about before, it's the epitome of greed is good.
Yeah.
The yuppie.
And do you know, even Brantley has that.
He does, yeah. Well, but, it's bizarre. When Brantley's Brantley, he's not exactly the farm boy. He is ambitious and he wants to succeed and he's nice.
Yes.
When he puts on the suit and becomes Carlton Whitfield,
yeah.
Then he sort of becomes a bit, not cunty, because he isn't cunty at all.
No, he's not.
He does
no.
take the time to talk to people. He's more cocky.
But he still is. I mean, if you look at it, his motivation from the beginning of the film is, let's get rich.
Mm.
I want to come back in my private jet.
Very, very much an 80s trait.
You know, maybe there's that aspect of, you know, if we're going deeper on it, he might have seen his parents, you know, growing up on a farm.
Mm.
Having financial troubles, and he actually wants to come in and save them. You know, I mean,
maybe,
you
know. Who knows? Absolutely. And there's that whole thing of, you know, those on top shit on the people who actually do all the fucking work.
Mm.
Essentially, it's still the fucking way of the world now, isn't it?
Did you, I mean, there's a couple of things I found out today that I never knew the last time we did this podcast.
Right.
Maybe this is just my observational skills.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they were engaged or married at the end.
Oh, with the ring?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did say it says because we watched it again this afternoon. After we got engaged, it says, did you stand around on a balcony doing that all the time?
And did you?
No.
No, right. No. Yeah, so I'm guessing, so I was like, oh, I'd never noticed that.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the fact that she's wearing the dress.
That
he fantasizes when he first meets her and she's having a drink from the water fountain.
But again, though, the ending for me, I know this word, just go there and work backwards. I had to, honestly, my face was hurting from smiling so much.
I'd forgotten the end goes on so long.
Okay.
I'd forgotten about the whole going to the opera.
Yeah, and, running around. Running up the steps. And look, we're rich. Woohoo!
Yeah, sitting on the handrail.
I mean, honestly, if the budget had been an extra 1 or 2 million more, they would have had a plane to Kansas, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think maybe I would have liked to have seen a scene where they both go back to the farm and she meets his parents.
Did you know that a sequel was proposed?
I've read something, I didn't go any deeper into it, but I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, it was never made, clearly, but... Yeah.
Any more info on what would have been in it? Or?
No idea, but... No. As opposed to a sequel, we've got a second Michael J. Fox thing. They made a musical out of it.
There's a musical.
A Secret of My Success.
From?
In 2020, it came out.
Oh, right.
So.
Oh, great. Just in time to be shut down for
Mad Bat essentially, disease. Yeah. So I found out about this, and I was as shocked as you are to hear this. So it was set for its world premiere in March 2020.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. I know, right? And apparently it did very well, like, you know, it was shut down for coronavirus, but yeah, apparently people are saying it kind of, they found it bizarre that people were making a musical out of Secret of My Success. However, It was quite charming and, yeah, it succeeded.
Was it still set in the 80s?
I don't know. I couldn't find out too much about it. There's a Wikipedia page about it.
There's still a lot about, you know, 80s music or 80s set musicals.
Yeah, and do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Night Ranger was featured in it and things like that, and Pat Benatar.
Well, a little offshoot, I watched the first time in ages, because me and Cez were both home on Friday night. So we watched bits of Comet Relief.
Oh, right. Was that this week?
This Friday just gone.
Oh, wow, okay.
Lenny Henry's last ever Comet Relief, apparently. His retirement due. Raised a hell of a lot of money, so good on them. Absolutely fantastic. Great. But they had, you know, they always have the latest thing from the West End.
Mm-hmm.
They have three or four spots where a show comes in and then they put on 5 minutes from the show. So they had the Live Aid musical, which is apparently going great guns in the West End at the moment.
Didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, did you not?
Nope.
Okay, well, right. they came in and did a thing. I will say that they had a female playing Freddie Mercury, which pissed me off slightly. I don't know why, but anyway, that's the way the world is now. But yes, so 80s set musicals or 80s themed musicals are still very, very de rigueur.
See, I'd say it's on the back of Back to the Future, the musical.
Mm.
However, it can't be. I mean, because that came out around the same time.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That would have opened a couple of months before the pandemic.
Yeah, when did it actually open in the West End?
Oh, in the West End.
22?
But yeah. I think 20... Yeah, it would be 22.
Yeah, there were lots of tryouts before.
It was Manchester before, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's nuts. I did not know there was a musical of Secret of My Success. Mm. I think we should try and find some footage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway.
Fucking COVID. Back to
the film.
Yeah, where were we? So, yuppie stuff. Greed is good. Howard.
He's
a lying douchebag, isn't he?
There's nothing redeemable about Uncle Howard. And he gets very rapey later on in the film.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything redeemable about him at all. And apart from, I guess, if you want to call it a redeemable feature, his physical appearance given his age, which isn't really a redeemable feature.
I suppose it's him.
You're right. There's nothing redeemable about him at all.
But the one thing I suppose I could pluck out there is he actually seems to soften to Brantley and give him a job. He does. He's kind of like when he does that impassioned speech about, think about when you were my age and, you know, you can sleep the night before your first interview. And he's like, you know what? And yeah, for him, I'm guessing that's a nice thing.
I really like, and would have liked to have seen more of his secretary.
Oh, me too.
Because she's great.
Yes. Because she knows his behaviours. Yeah. And yeah, that would have been brilliant.
And I find her really, really charming. When he photocopies his face and writes the message on there,
yeah,
which bizarrely from writing it to handing it over has gone from a ballpoint pen to a Sharpie. She has that sort of, she's not corporate as corporate as other people, and I'll see what I can do.
She's seasoned as well. She's worked with him for long enough to know that he's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, but he's the boss. He's worked his way up. No, he hasn't. He's married into being the boss. No, he is a dick, actually.
What I found really funny, though, is looking at his entourage of people. Because they seem lovely. I mean, you know, apart from Art, who is
a twat.
Uncle Frank from Home Alone.
He's playing the type all the time, isn't he, Frank?
Imagine if Uncle Frank, though... He was actually Uncle Frank in that film.
Yeah, but 3 years earlier.
Yes, imagine if he was Uncle Frank.
Pretty much the same character, though, isn't it? And I love the fact he treats Davis.
Davis.
But yeah, no, fuck him. He looks like Robert Jenrick, so he deserves everything.
Poor
he gets.
Davis. Like, you could do me being more like her. I'm like, oh, poor Davis.
And just throws his report over his shoulder. But he gets his own back at the end because he gets to grin.
Yeah, he does. He gets to grin.
Right. He gets to grin when Uncle Frank gets fired. But yeah, Uncle Howard's a liar. He's a greedy bastard. He's a philanderer. Serial philanderer, by the sounds of it. But yeah, he is a dick.
I also really paid attention this time to when Michael J. Fox says to Aunt Vera, and he's like, look, you know, because I looked up Margaret Whitten.
Yeah.
And she was like late 30s. And it's that whole obsession with, you know, staying young, staying fit. And when he says, look, you're just beautiful. Your husband's a jerk. And I really liked that moment. I really liked that moment.
Yeah.
It was...
He's not wrong. I mean, to be fair, she is beautiful as well. But she's also a very, very good actress. She plays the... I guess you call her a cougar now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if she's only in her late 30s, it's hardly...
Well, she's probably 49, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, 40 then.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just late 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, you're 49. Hang on to your 49.
Shut up!
Hang on to your late 40s,
yeah,
Des.
I know, okay.
But yeah, she was great.
Yeah. And very, very funny. And the whole, that car journey, when he's driving her home, I mean, it's so full of... imagery.
Oh yeah, it's a bit Naked Gun when he talks about like everything reminds me, and you see like silos with boobs, and it's when she's like undoing the lipstick, and it's like
the
shutter between the
car door, that going up and down, the car door lock going in and out, the aerial rising, the windscreen washes squirting.
And it was the perfect song.
Again. I said to Cez, how many films has this song been featured in?
Well, obviously, there's this. Ferris.
Cez says it's in K-9 as well.
Is it?
K-9 has sex with another dog.
I've not watched that film in a long time.
It seems to be, at this point in time, the go-to... sauciness song,
but we have been guilty of listening to it weeks in a row because it's thing is, that's it. If someone says bom, bom, you have to finish off the sentence.
It's also universal, isn't it? It's like da, 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 da,
da, da.
Exactly. And I bet even people that haven't seen the film could do it,
but they got the money's worth. They appear twice.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how much Yellow were paid in total for all those royalties from all those films. You just need one song.
But that was the perfect music, A, to use then, B, to use towards the end of the film when they're doing the very farcical bedroom sneak.
Yes, isn't it a farce. This film just sort of jumps between so many different styles.
Yeah.
And that could get very, very messy and clumpy, if you like. But I take my hat off to Herbert Ross. It doesn't.
No.
It flows really, really well.
I think there's a couple of bits you kind of go, yeah, you could probably lose that.
Mm.
But it's nothing major.
It didn't feel too long to me. I just enjoyed the ride. And there's a lot of riding going on in this film. Although I have to say that first meeting where Brantley first sees Christy, it's a little bit creepy.
Yeah,
it's a bit too drawn out in just staring at her.
But also, it's very reminiscent of Fast Times and things like that, isn't it? When everything goes in slow motion and the girl's walking. I mean, at least she wasn't in a bikini getting out of a pool.
Shame.
Yeah, fuck this film.
This film's shit. What a missed opportunity. I mean, she's a real ice maiden, isn't she?
Her eyes, though, they just draw you in, don't they? And here's the thing, Des, I could not decide how good Helen Slater is. I was like, is she good?
There's moments when she's fantastic, and there are other moments when I think...
Yeah, I'm thinking, should they have used another take? You know, because like she sounds very programmed, but then I thought, well, maybe is that a character decision? Because Christy is so programmed and so...
like I said about the whole Metropolis thing, it's automaton almost.
Yeah, I guess it's that moment when she's like, good morning. By that I meant goodbye, and...
It's cold as ice.
But then her transition to warming up to Brantley slash Carlton, it feels very quick, but then you realise she's actually been in a really shit situation with...
Well, you say it's quick. They stay up all night.
They really do, don't they?
Yeah.
But then I got... I looked at the timeline. So they stayed up all night, and then Richard Jordan says to, where were you all weekend? Oh, I was busy. And then, I'd like you to come out to the place at the weekend. Well, I'm like, Where the fuck's the week gone?
Well, I guess that's the Monday.
Yes. No, so but then he says, weekend. Yeah, this is like next weekend. Yeah. But then it was like almost the working week went. But anyway, that's by the by.
By the by.
But they did, yeah, they just stay up and then they stayed up all night, you know what I'm saying?
He stayed up.
But it was wasn't it a weird scene though to kind of go, okay, then fine, we'll wait. We'll wait. And then 30 seconds, 40 seconds later, they're kissing.
I think that's him saying, I ain't going to wait.
Yeah, I suppose so.
He's leading the negotiation there. Yeah, the whole fact that she's this ice maiden that he manages to melt, if you like, being romantic about it. It's nice that it's a genuine relationship rather than a fuck you way to the top relationship.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And reading what we've read today as well, yesterday, I don't know when you read it, but the fact that they were looking at her being a prostitute or mistress slash, you know, paid employee of...
Yeah, that would have been a...
I think it would be a completely different film. I think it's great that she's a strong female executive who's actually got a chip on her shoulder because, sorry, I hear a joke about the men's room all the time.
Yeah. What I don't buy is what happens between the bedroom farce and the takeover.
Yeah, that's a bit weird, right?
It just sort of happens.
It's them arguing. The film almost feels like, oh, shit, we've got to get to the end now. They're arguing, they get into a lift. Next thing you know, they're together. And then he's like, oh, let me make... Now, if that's the morning of the takeover, so you're telling me he managed to get in touch with all those people and Vera that morning?
Is it the morning?
Yeah, it is, because it was Monday morning. There was a meeting scheduled with Donald Davenport. Right. So that morning, they went to collect their stuff. By the time the meeting was there, let's be graceful and call it 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He'd managed to assemble all these people he just met at the weekend.
I also don't get how buying 5% in another company means you take over that company. Maybe I'm being a bit dim because I know nothing about stocks and shares and the financial markets.
I've done a bit of research into this today as well. And it's also to do with, I think, anything above 5% you've got to declare to the SEC. And
SEC?
I think the Securities and Exchange Commission. In America. And I think then they are looking at buying up more stock than 5%. But I think they kept it under the wraps because under 5%, you do not declare it to the SEC. After that, so you'd have to file a paper and they would know that you're trying to take over. So I think what they would have done after that is bought more. This sounds really geeky, so I'm going to shut the fuck up.
No, because I need to know. It's for me, as a lay person,
so,
I don't understand how it works.
I think what they were doing, guys, if I'm wrong, then please write in, let us know. But I think what they were doing, they bought what they could do without alerting Davenport or whatever else. However, there was intent to buy more, but they literally said, we are now buying you out. So it wasn't 5%. They said it was the 5%, but I think they were then intending to buy more.
Right.
And also then with, I was going to call him Moria, then Vera, then controlling the majority stake in Pembrose.
Yeah. But surely Davenport would own the majority stake
in his company.
So how can they buy him out if he owns the majority stake?
I guess maybe straight after that meeting, they went and then bought loads more.
But if he still owns the majority stake, then the more isn't available for sale, surely.
I don't know.
I don't know how it works. That's completely alien world to me.
But yeah, I mean, it did get very convoluted towards the end.
Yeah. But then that's movies though, isn't it? Apart from all that... It flows well. It flows nicely.
Yes.
I just didn't understand the end, I think, because I don't understand stocks and shares and buyouts and hostile takeovers and all that sort of gumph.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole hostile takeover obviously is there from the beginning with first company. We were meant to start getting educated on that. From what I took from it is, yeah, they control 5% of Davenport and there was probably the intent... straight after that meeting to buy a lot more. Maybe not from him, maybe from other people. So maybe... Yeah.
Who knows? Anyway, it works.
Yeah.
So they get rid of him. Allegedly, very, very similar. I've never seen it. to how to succeed in business without really trying.
No, nope. Yeah, never seen it.
Anyway, yes. Anything more to add on that?
No. I think I'm ready for highs and lows.
Highs and lows, then, being an even numbered episode, I'll go first. My highlight, first highlight, has to be it's essentially the script, but the fact it's so bloody funny for such a it's not really a comedy.
No, it's not.
But how many sight gags are there? How many moments of physical comedy? I mean, you got Vera with the whole sexual innuendo stuff we've already mentioned. But then when he's in Howard's office
and hits his head.
Hits his head on the floor / ceiling. it's really funny. I almost expected him to do the same as he did in Back to the Future when they're in the pool house after he first bones his auntie. And sort of jump across, trying to put his trousers on, and fall over.
Yes.
But there's physical gags, there's sight gags.
It's even the stuff like when he says, you want to go out for dinner? No. What about tonight? No. What about tomorrow? Busy. He's like, all right, okay, just don't beg.
Don't beg.
He's getting desperate.
And when they do go out for food, Sheila
Oh, Sheila. Brilliant. She's fucking hilarious. Love Sheila.
Jean is hilarious. All these characters, and it's just, it's so charming in a background of such utter wankery.
Yeah.
One-upmanship array.
Gene is a nut. I heard that.
Sheila.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Did I say Gene?
Gene, yeah.
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 Sheila's a nut.
Sheila's a nut. I heard that. Yeah. So, for me, my first highlight is the fact it is, even though it's not a knockabout Naked Gun style comedy, it is still very, very funny.
Okay.
Yourself?
We've already touched on like one of them was, I think the way they portray the shots in New York, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually going to say the cast of characters. I mean, I think you've got some great characters there. Maybe some could have been embellished a bit more. You've got his essentially his best mate, which that's a cool character.
They don't really see a relationship evolving too much.
No.
But, at the end, he's boning his auntie.
But you kind of, they stay on, really good terms. He kind of covers for him when the boss is trying to get it. But it's a nice mishmash of characters. Yeah, I really like them all. And it just made me smile. This film makes me smile. That's it. The cast.
Okay. then my second highlight. This might be sort of
it's probably mine as well, I think.
Or a quitty thing, or too easy
no,
to say.
No, it's mine as well, I'm
it's
sure.
It's Michael J. Fox.
Oh, okay, it's not.
Okay.
Right.
it seems to be the obvious thing to go for, but as I've already said, he carries this film. He's funny, he's charming, he's so damn watchable.
Mm.
It's so lovable. The whole rags to riches thing is not new in the slightest. If it is a rags to riches, you don't really know how well the farm's doing. As we've said so many times throughout this podcast, nothing was impossible in the 80s. And, going into this cutthroat industry, this cutthroat building, and, actually getting a job in the first place, and then having the balls to take over somebody's office and build this whole charade is, he's just brilliant. And as we said, he's hardly not in it. There's only a few scenes that he is not in. For such a young guy, that's a big one. I know he's done it before with Teen Wolf and Back to the Future and stuff like that. He has the experience. He has the gravitas.
He's got
to
the chops. Let's put it that way. He's got the chops.
He's so bloody lovable. And he's just fantastic. If you want to see the reason why he is one of the biggest stars of the 80s and beyond, obviously, but why he... His light was shining so bright. Easy for me to say. But if you want to see why his light was shining so brightly in the 80s, then this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way I can argue with that. I mean, obviously, he would have been more modern mind, but it's a given as
exactly.
well, for me. So I'm not saying that. No.
But the fact he's hardly not on screen. I mean, that's a dreadful way of putting it, but... It's his film and he's fantastic. So that he's a real highlight for me.
Okay. Well, I mean, I feel like I've copped out with my second one because It's the soundtrack, Daz. It's okay. What a fucking awesome soundtrack.
We haven't got it yet.
I know. But I couldn't not have it as one of my highlights.
Absolutely fine, let's do it.
So, I mean, we don't have to talk about it now, but
While we're here.
Okay, let's do that then. I mean, Jesus Christ. The as soon as I see the Universal logo to hear, and I know exactly what's coming, I'm like, and Night Ranger kicks in. My God, it just puts a smile on your face. But then it's bookended perfectly at the end of the film with Pat Benatar with SUCCESS.
Yep, sometimes the good guys finish
first.
That's
it, yeah.
Which reminds me a little bit of
Robert Palmer
song, Simply Irresistible. Yeah, it's a cracker.
But I couldn't not put that because the soundtrack, I mean, I was smiling already when he was, you know, fucking over Davenport. But then as soon as that music kicked in, I was like, yes. And it is inspirational. And the way they've used the other songs in it, like I Burn For You, and they've used the instrumental. And it didn't fall into the same fate as Working Girl of like the same song being used over and over. I'm not dissing Working Girl. I'm just saying I think this film did it better when it came to the soundtrack. Although, to be fair, I'm guessing the soundtrack didn't do that well.
For people, again, in the know, those who know, maybe it did.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, the film itself, as we said, took over 100 fucking million in profit.
I burn for you.
And I was watching it today I did my research later. And all I could think of, I mean, it could be such a cheesy moment. When he first catches sight of Christy in the water fountain, and there's that piano. I mean, it's a lot of slutty
sax.
And it's
Burn For You, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but that theme. And all I think is that's really like the main theme in St. Elmo's Fire. Da, 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 da. The piano-y, soft, keyboard-y, and it turns out
it's
David Foster.
Yes,
who
David
was
Foster.
Also the composer for St. Elmo's Fire. But referring back to your earlier stuff in this, I find a lot of the music very L.A. Law style-y.
Oh, really?
The theme tune stuff. There's a lot of slutty sax and soft keys. I mean, to assemble songs from, you know, Bananarama, Pat Benatar, Roger Daltrey, Katrina and the Waves.
Which Banana song was it? Because it was when they were in the cafe, wasn't
it? It's Risk and a Romance.
And that's when Sheila was then doing
the great Sheila.
Sheila.
But it's a Daryl Hall piece of work. As we said, sometimes the good guys finish first. We're from Pat Benatar. The Price of Love from Roger Daltrey.
I swear it's the price of love.
Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine. Apparently, Night Ranger were expecting the Secret of My Success song to be used on the trailer for the Secret of My Success. But we're shafted a little bit, and they used Walking on Sunshine.
Well, let's question that a little bit because, I mean, you're Eurovision, aren't you?
I'm Eurovision.
You're like a Eurovision master, Darren.
I wouldn't go that far. I like Eurovision because it's an excuse to have a party and chat with the TV.
So Katrina was...
She won for us.
Yeah.
Back in 1997.
97.
Or some year, I don't know. Offhand, I've no idea.
Have we seen Katrina?
We have. And we're going to see her again this year?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
I didn't actually know it was Roger Daltrey, though. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'd said to Sayers, this is very Daltrey. It's more Lost Boys Daltrey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. From Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd had a little Shazam. Yeah, it's Daltrey.
Brilliant. Yeah.
But obviously, then on top of that, you've got Yellow and, oh, yeah.
Have you? Have you
just
got
in case
you
missed it by any chance. And a little reference to I'm in the Mood for Love and I Get a Kick Out of You and Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered. When she's doing a little medley.
Yeah. Oh, it's a medley. Great. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Jaws.
Yes.
It's not even a nod to it. It's the Jaws.
It is the
music.
Jaws theme.
I also think there's a little nod to Psycho as well in the shower.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I think as a soundtrack, it's up there with the best of the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I need to go on eBay and bid against you.
Fuck you. No, don't tell everyone. Oh, no. It's only running for another 8 days. Shut up.
Well, exactly. By the time this episode
goes
out.
Stop it. But yeah, I think it's really, really, really good. You are actually looking on eBay now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah,
you fucker. You're going to see there's two watches, and one of them is me.
Secret of my success.
Bastard.
Vinyl. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, we're not in the middle of a podcast or anything. Fucking hell. So, yeah, I think this...
it's only £1 at the moment.
That's what I'd said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I hadn't fucking said it now.
Submit a bid.
Bastard. £100. So, yeah, it's a great soundtrack. It deserves more recognition than it's got. Yeah,
someone's winning, by the way.
I haven't put a bid in yet.
No, but someone has.
For £1?
No, I bid £4 and someone's put £4.20.
Did you actually put a bid in?
Yeah.
Oh, you knob.
Someone's already done it though. They'd already secured it.
Anyway, yes, can we get back to the fucking podcast?
Yeah, sorry.
Music.
It's good. Great.
It's good. So anyway, that's our highlights. Lowlights then. My first lowlight, I think, is a theme that sort of... It's come out in a couple of, actually, his films that we've seen. It was the same with Teen Wolf. There's quite a nasty streak that runs through it. It's not all sunshine and roses.
Mm.
The relationships are quite horrible, especially Vera and Howard, obviously.
Yeah.
No matter how joking and fun they are, if you scratch the surface, she actually wants to be loved. And he is just a complete bastard who's just using her, I think, to be the chief of this business.
Yeah. I think maybe he wanted to be with her when she was younger. Mm. And I think that's why she's got that obsession with staying.
But she's not old.
No, but that's why she's got the obsession with staying young.
Yeah. But
and he's way older.
But that, I mean, that's a nasty streak in itself.
Yeah.
Wanting to be younger to please your man. But also the fact that Christy is not the only floozy that he's had.
Well, that's the weird thing, though, isn't it? Because actually she's...
Bimbo or whatever.
Yeah, the bimbo. With. Yeah, she was called a bimbo. But also Christy's smart enough not to get with him. But then, like she says, you're working on a project. You mistake that intensity for love. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's in terms of relationships, there's that. In terms of how people treat people in different departments or what they conceive to be... lower jobs and is also a nasty streak.
And it's the suits and
the suits and the proles, basically.
Yeah, if you succeed, then you know you become a suit. If you don't, then you get canned.
So, and don't ever speak to them. And he's right. Why? You know, I'm a person. They're a person.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't I fucking speak to them? Fuck you. And you know that's very much something that I identify with.
But it is the 80s, isn't it, where that was a thing, the whole yuppie thing.
It's the greed is good thing again. Yep. And me. That's that whole culture.
I've still never seen Wall Street, by the way.
Well, get on the list.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, so for me, my first lowlight is the fact that given all the comedy stuff, there's still quite a nasty streak that runs through it.
Okay.
So that's my first lowlight. Yourself?
Daz, I'm going to have to tell you the truth. I'm being picky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being picky because I love this film so much and I can forgive a lot of its stuff. So this is going to sound incredibly picky.
Funny that. Is it going to sound picky?
So what I'm saying is, if I'm being picky, I think the chase with the boss in the boss of the mailroom, I think it was a bit unnecessary, I guess, because it never really went anywhere. The whole I'm watching you, and yes, it was paid off a little bit at the end when he became the chauffeur. I'm not sure it needed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just felt a bit weird that he's running around.
I guess it's never, ever going to be an actual storyline of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And there's already a lot going on anyway.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. If I'm being really picky,
that
probably didn't need to be there, the whole chase scene there.
Okay.
That's kind of it.
Okay. Well, then my second low light is I think the end goes on too long. Only by a few minutes. The whole montage of them going to the opera or once the final piece of music, which should be the final piece of music before the credits roll, once that kicks in, that's the end of the film for me.
Yeah,
but then it goes on for another 2 or 3 minutes.
It's sometimes the good guys finish first, then it goes into Night Ranger.
Nothing actually happens, and nothing's furthered on the story. So it's literally just them running around the Metropolitan Opera.
Yeah.
And okay, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but again, it's being picky.
Yeah.
It could have saved, it should, could have shaved a few minutes off, but that's it.
Okay. This is really funny because my second low light.
Yes.
Is I thought that, right, this sounds like I'm contradicting you. It's not. The whole thing wrapped up a little quickly. I don't, and that's not pertaining.
Pertaining.
That's not pertaining to the end. Yeah, as you say, as soon as it goes, S-U-C-C-E-S-S. And then you have the montage A. It's actually...
Another montage A.
But it's pertaining to what happened before. Because like 5 or 7 minutes before the entire film finishes, they're arguing and they haven't
done the... It's the end of the first, the bedroom first.
Yeah, they haven't really done the whole takeover. And I think maybe they might have done justice to... I don't know, heist movie a little bit more and give us a bit more time on how they were looking at maybe planning to take over. Yes, it's nice that we get the surprise, like the audience this, that, and the other. But I don't see what.
I agree. I don't thought about it. If that is just all happened on a Monday morning,
yes,
it's a bit skew if it doesn't work.
Yeah. And from what I get, you know, from the timeline, because they did like a war chest weekend or whatever to stop Davenport on the Monday. They clearly were both fired the Monday morning or Monday afternoon meeting. And then
all you need to do is change one line. The meeting is Friday.
Yeah. And it gives them a whole week to sort it out.
5 days to, right, okay, we've just got it on in the lift. What can we do? How can we get around this?
Yes. Yeah. So there we go. That's kind of that. That's why I said the whole thing wrapped a bit quickly, but not what you were saying. It's the actual wrapping before it gets to the.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. That's our look at the film. We're going to take another break now, and then we're going to come back for the big, big quiz, possibly.
And we're back. Part three of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure. This feature length episode, I'm guessing. Where we are talking about the secret of my success, but it's episode 100, so therefore you can hear...
Celebrate it, Dad, come on!
You can hear the alcohol kicking in.
Yeah, cheesy.
Yeah, there's Prosecco, there is lots of fun, there's pizza going on. We're having a party here.
We're having a party.
Quiz time!
Eyes down for a full house.
Yes, as my learned friend says, it's time for the quiz now.
Learned friend, yeah.
But as it stands for this last block of 10 quiz of the quiz
are you literally going to do the thing where you go, oh, the last block of 10, I've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, I've won 9 out of the last blocks of 10, so this could be a sweep. Is
do
that
you
what
you honestly think I'd go that way?
Yep.
Okay. I'm offended by that.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, as it stands in this block of 10,
yeah,
in this block of 10, we've had 9 quizzes, and it is, let me just check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 5-4. So that's 5-4 to me. So if I win this week, then I've won. Let me just double check all of the fucking blocks of 10. But if you win, then you take us to a tie break situation.
I'm not sure I can handle it when it comes to the booze.
You handle it. So that's the score, 5-4 to me, going into this quiz, being an even-numbered episode. I get to ask the first question.
Great.
So question one for you.
Mm-hmm.
According to Uncle Howard, how many people work in the building?
30,000.
Your final answer?
Yes.
Correct.
I was really confident on that.
Yeah, you were straight in there.
Yeah, 30,000 people. Right. Yeah. Okay. Should I have like maybe extended that and gone, is it 29,000? Is it 31,000? No, okay.
Sorry, it's only question one.
All right, okay.
Build up, ramp up the tension on that.
All right, then. Do you want a numbers question?
Well, number one would be good.
Do you want a numbers question?
Whatever.
Okay. You'll know that because it's difficult. What office does Carlton Whitfield reside in?
4949 or something like that.
Was that your final answer?
I can't really remember, but yes.
4319.
Oh, balls. Okay. That's. Okay. Question number two for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a Says question for you. What is the perfume that Vera applies in the car?
Oh, I don't know.
No?
No, no idea.
Apparently, it's Joy by Jean Patou of Paris. Yeah.
Thanks, sis. Wow. All right, then.
All righty, then.
What document did Davenport file that made the Primrose Corporation aware of the hostile takeover?
It's something like a... What is it? It's a letter and a number, isn't it?
Might be.
It's something... Oh, I don't know. A D12 or something like that.
I mean, you were very close.
What is it?
13D.
Oh, shit.
And I was unaware. I was like, is it BD? I had to Google it. Right. And I actually found out that a 13D is what you have to file to the SEC if you are trying to take over. Yeah. This is how we went into all this research about... Yeah.
Damn it. Okay, I need to get my back here, don't I? Right. Okay. When we first hear Uncle Howard, he's having a rant to his team.
Yes, he is.
What is the deficit to the company that he's ranting about?
As in how much?
Yes.
I think I know this. It's not one of my questions.
Okay.
I hope I'm right. I think it's 300 million.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Correct.
No! Are you kidding me? Yeah,
seriously, the deficit was $300 million. Shit. Okay. I mean, it's all academic now, but give me the final question.
I thought you'd appreciate this question.
Right.
What opera folio is in the background when Christy gets called a bimbo?
Marriage of Figaro.
Yeah, well done.
Yes, I noticed that on the my second viewing today.
Yeah.
Okay, so after three questions each, it's 4-2 to you.
Oh, no.
Which means it's 5 each on this block of 10. So there we have it. We are going to a tiebreak situation.
And there was no pause there at all for me to make my questions.
It's I think it's quite appropriate that we're going to this for our last accumulative quiz.
Yes. Quiz.
So anyway, yes. Do you want to go first or second?
You have to. It's an odd number.
Okie dokie then. Right. No hanging about. Question and answer.
Can I say, I think out of these 10 that we're asking each other, I think somebody might fluke it and get one or two.
Yeah.
Because these are films that
it's been a long time.
But also, we've gone bi-weekly now. So not just is it a long time.
Bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly.
Formally.
But it also, it is... You know, it's been a long time since we've looked at any of these films.
Well, here we go, yes. Episode 91, then. So the first question is from episode 91. 91, Red Heat. What was the name of the cop guarding Tatomovich?
O'Malley.
Arnie. 92.
Was it actually Arnie?
Yeah. 92, Ernest Saves Christmas. What's the name of the production company making Christmas Sleigh?
Christmas Sleigh, I've no idea.
Diamond World Picks. 93, A Christmas Carol. What are the names of the two gentlemen collecting for the charity?
Higgins and Pierce.
Paul and Hacking. 94, 8-Bit Christmas. How many wreaths does Jake sell to the residents of the nursing home?
16?
47.
Shit.
95, Home Alone. What is Old Man Marley's nickname?
The something shoveler, the shoveler of, no, I don't know.
The South Bend Shovel Slayer.
Damn it! I knew 96, there was shovel in there!
The Outsiders.
Yeah.
What petrol station does Soda Pop work in?
BP.
DX. 97, Predator. What is Arnie's radio call sign?
Oh, I get to the chopper, I know this, Falcon.
Blazer 1. 98, Staying Alive. What's the first rule of the Fulton Hotel?
You pay in cash.
Rooms must be paid for in advance. 99 of you to a kill. Where was Zorin born?
Austria?
Dresden.
Fuck's sake.
And 100, secret of my success. What time do Howard and Brantley have lunch? According to Brantley's watch.
Wow. Banker. So I'm 0 for 10. 12:25. 12:15.
Okay. Your 10 questions.
Okay. Red Heat.
Yes.
When was Victor born? September 4th, 1944.
On to you.
What time did the kids show finish at the Orlando Children's Museum?
3:40 p.m.
Correct. There we go, you won. Okay, I'll carry on for prosperity. How much did Scrooge put the price up by in Christmas Carol?
5%?
Yep. Wanker. Also, in 8-bit, what is the childhood dog called?
Scamp.
Elwood. Home Alone. How many people are in the vans? So when they count them through?
Nine.
Nope. There's 5 boys, 6 girls. That's 11. 4 parents. So 15. And 2 drivers.
Oh, in total. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. Yep.
How much money does Dallas give Johnny to go on the lam? You got this right when we did it, I'm sure.
15 cents?
50 bucks. I mean, I think 15 cents is not a lot to go on the lam.
On the lam?
Yeah, as in, you know, when you're off running away from the law. He gives him 50 bucks.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
In Predator, where were the Green Berets they found based?
Oh, that was Fort Worth.
Fort Bragg. What time does Tony call Jackie after he has sexy time with Laura?
3:32 a.m.
Yeah. Really?
I remember that, yeah.
Right, okay. View to a kill. How long is the explosive set for?
I'm going to say the same as I said last week. I think it's 2,000 seconds, but 1 hour 42 minutes or something. I don't know.
36 minutes.
Oh, okay, fuck. Yep.
And secret of my success, what was on the building that he first went to for his job that did not exist?
Ooh. Spider-Man. No idea.
H.J. Callow and Co. Incorporated.
Okay. Right. So then, after 10 questions each, the final score is 13-7 to me.
Could have been a lot worse.
Could have been worse. Which means I take this week. Which means it's a clean sweep. 10 blocks of 10.
Mm.
And I've won all blocks.
You have won all blocks. I would be interested to delve into the figures and see how many we've won each,
exactly,
actually.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it's that far apart. Because we keep ending up in fucking tie breaks.
Yeah. But there we go. I mean, that's exciting. That's fun. I like
that. Oh, yeah, you do, because you win.
Well, if you've done your fucking research.
I do.
Anyway, I guess that's finally last orders at the fucking bar.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So there we are. That was our little look at...
our first ever film.
First ever
technically.
Film. Yeah, great. I enjoyed that. Really enjoyed going back to see that. So I suppose all that's left to do now is to sum it up and give it a score. So, Darren, as it is an even-numbered episode, you need to go first.
Okay. I'm really confused with this, in a way. After I finished watching it with Cersei this afternoon, I said to her, I love the film, but it's not a 10-star film. It isn't. It just isn't because of what it is. I love it. There's no two ways about it. And I adore Michael J. Fox. The man is a fucking 80s film genius.
I mean, to be fair, and 90s.
And 19, yeah, absolutely. And I really like the film. I like the subject of the film. I like the fact that they make it a comedy out of something that could very easily be a drama.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
And he does carry the film himself. The soundtrack is fantastic. The characters are all played perfectly. Maybe a little bit of, like you said earlier, alternative takes could have been used to
bolster the performance.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad performance, but some takes are a little bit iffy.
Yes.
That's probably the best way to put it. But you know what? It's a Michael J. Fox film set in the 80s where he comes up from below and defeats the odds. And because of that, it's a fantastic film. And do you know what? If you want to sit down of an afternoon and just enjoy a film, then why not watch this? We've said all the way through this podcast, it's not particularly well known from what we can tell. And I don't get why, because it's brilliant. And so I'm going to give it an 8.5. That's
nice.
My score.
Nice. Yourself? I'm going higher.
Oh, okay.
I'm going higher. No, but I'm the same as you. I had a quandary because I finished this with the biggest grin on my face. Mm. It's like, I love this, but I cannot in all good conscience.
No, fuck it. I'm revising. I'm going for a 9.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, no problem. I've done that a couple of times. And do you know what? All the other stuff aside, that's what I'm going for is a 9. Mm-hmm. And the reason is this. It's charming. It's funny. The soundtrack is fucking brilliant. It's just such a good feel-good film. And tell me you do not find yourself smiling at the end when the good guys win and nothing is impossible in the 80s. He gets the girl that he loves and everything is right with the world. The baddies are gone. You know, it is literally that simple. And it's a beautiful Michael J. Fox film. And, you know, everyone thinks of Back to the Future. And I'm never taking anything away from that. Trust me. But to have a second Michael J. Fox film that I love just as much as some of the other installments in the trilogy, it's wonderful to have. And I will watch this film over and over again. And I think me and you are unique in the respect that we connect on this film. We connect in that not a lot of other people go, if you say Secret of My Success, someone's like, yeah, I think I've heard of it. Mm. Or they don't seem to have watched it.
Bizarrely.
And I'm like, why the fuck not? Mm. So yeah, I'm going a solid 9 as well.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, this film makes me feel good.
Yeah.
It's a feel-good film for me.
Do you know why,
it's
Darren?
Because?
Sometimes the good guys finish first. Sometimes the best is all it takes.
That's the way you're supposed to exist. Yeah, no. Well, there we go. That's 18 out of 20. What do you guys... Have you seen this film? Bizarrely, it seems like a lot of people haven't.
Yeah,
and I don't
crazy.
Get that because I think it's always been in my life. Since it first came out. I seem to have had it on VHS.
I just remember going to the video shop and seeing that cover with the champagne bottle and J. Fox.
Yeah. But also because it's Michael J. Fox. And after Back to the Future, I wanted to see anything that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he was
in. Have you seen Bright Lights, Big City?
Bizarrely, no, I haven't.
No, neither have I. Okay. So that's a new Michael J. Fox film.
Well, there
us.
We go. That's something to look forward to.
Right, okay, so that is it. Do you love it? Do you hate it? I mean, please tell me you don't hate it. If you hate it, then just don't listen to us anymore.
If you hate Michael J. Fox, what the fuck is wrong with you?
And that is... So, 100 episodes, things are changing next episode.
They are, yes. Not too much.
No.
It's still essentially the same podcast.
Same podcast, but just a few
It's still
tweets.
Us two fucking ass wipes.
That's brilliant. That's
it's true, though, isn't it?
but
we're just...
Yeah, we're
keeping things fresh.
Yeah, we're changing things about with the format a little bit. Not nothing too much.
Nope. It's essentially the same podcast, but a couple of new features, a couple of new ways of doing things.
Exactly. And so for the last time, I will give you the tagline for next week's film.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're changing how we do that next time as well. So,
get on.
I keep saying next week's film. We do it bi-weekly, I keep saying.
Fortnightly.
So the tagline for the next episode is simply, the heat's back on. So that's it. That is the tagline for it. I mean, we know for the first 10 episodes, as we go to the next block I say block of them, but as we go into the next 101, 102, we are doing sequels because we thought, why the fuck not?
Yeah. Sequels to all the films we've done.
And may I raise a glass to, like, genuinely the people that listen, that give us support, and have done for the last 4 years.
Wow, so it's just taken us 4 years to get to episode 100.
I mean, it kind of has worked out every other week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So now we decided to embrace it. And
it means we don't have to take a break throughout the year.
Yeah, it means we release every other week throughout the entire year.
For the rest of our lives.
So there are no big chunks in the summer or whenever.
What'd you call me?
Big chunk.
Okay.
Okay.
So, rude.
As always, please feel free to get in touch.
Don't forget to buy us a Ko-fi. Ko-fi. And just get in touch, like I said.
And if you can spare a second, if whatever podcast platform you listen to on, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a little review or a 5-star, not 4, we don't deserve that.
No, just a 5-star. If you don't want to leave a 5-star review, then fuck off, basically.
Wow.
True,
that's
though,
the Prosecco talking, isn't it?
5-star or nothing.
All right, let's get drunk.
Okay, more
Daz,
drunk.
Daz.
Happy episode 100, my friend.
Happy episode 100, man. Cheesy. Love you lots. So, anything else?
25 hours a day. It's only 24 hours in the day, though. I mean,
until next time, then. I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheesy!
At number 10 this week, it's last week's 17, and the Fine Young Cannibals and Ever Fallen in Love.
What's that?